Welcome everyone to the Friday night public discussion group of Perfecting Horizons Institute. All right, we are in paper 52, section 6, which is old single column, page 597. All right. This section is, is an exception here in the sequence of the sections in this paper. And we've been stepping through the dispensations, little thumbnail sketches of the dispensations. And, the preceding section, section 5, was actually about the post-apostolic Son Age. They wanted to throw in just a little aside for our benefit, since our Creator Son decided to mix things up, and we're rebellion and default on top of it. So, we're a very exceptional post-apostolic Son Age on this planet. So they just wanted to throw in a few comments, in that regard. Remember, as we were going through that previous section, they occasionally threw in an occasional contrasting statement there too. On a normal world, blah blah blah. However, and then they would point out the contrast. And and the way that section ended, very definitively sets up a point of contrast. You don't have to read section 6 to appreciate the contrast with this statement. Look at those last couple little sentences there in the previous section. Mortal affairs are almost but not quite utopian. This truly is a great and glorious age. And remember, truly is a technical term. We're talking, in the fullness of the triunity of the cosmos, that universal harmony is manifesting as above, so below. So we all know that that's not the world that we know and love. So let's just see what things they thought it might be helpful to throw in as additional contrast to reflect on the differential. Not just woe is us. The point of the contrast isn't just the negativity of the contrast. There's a positivity to it as well. That's why I purposely just said that we know and love. Just to purposely throw out that little tease about, do you love the potential of this world? Because, it's extraordinarily positive, in addition to all of the extraordinarily negative things that you trip over all the time in your day-to-day life. All right, so let's see what they have to say here.
Section 6, Urantius Post-Bestowal Age. The Bestowal Son is the Prince of Peace. He arrives with the message, peace on earth and goodwill among men. On normal worlds, this is a dispensation of worldwide peace. The nations no more learn war. But such salutary influences did not attend the coming of your Bestowal Son, Christ Michael. Urantia is not proceeding in the normal order. Your world is out of step in the planetary procession. Your master, when on earth, warned his disciples that his advent would not bring the usual reign of peace on Urantia. He distinctly told them that there would be, quote, wars and rumors of wars, unquote, and that nation would rise against nation. At another time he said, quote, think not that I have come to bring peace upon earth.
Okay, yes. Does anyone kind of remember, what else is that last one? Think not that I have come to bring peace upon earth, but rather soul struggle. Right?
What'd you say?
Soul, struggle. You know, as we've talked about a number of times, when you do the kind of rudimentary spiritual uplifting that is the job of a bestowal son, in the context that we have, and you know, hasn't changed much in the last 2,000 years, you don't necessarily get the actuality of uplift, right? You get the potentiality of uplift. And what the potentiality of uplift looks like is a differential, right? A voltage, a very high voltage set up, you know, between our ears, right? I mean, we all have our heads immersed in that incredible differential that he set up. I mean, so, you know, he knew that when he did this, it would just inject unresolvable in any near, you know, time frame, an unresolvable tension into everything about this world. Families wouldn't be more peaceful; they would be more ripped in half. You know, everything, every institution. You know, your very internal life. You know, he would create this potentially just destructive tension inside of you that's your challenge to not succumb to. It's very tough love stuff. You know, it's not like, well, you've been really beat up, you know, so let's treat you very gingerly. Instead, he did the exact opposite. He did everything but, you know, literally push you off the cliff. So it's, you know, it's a very interesting thing to contemplate, the wisdom of that, which obviously is not obvious in any immediate context. You're going to have to expand your thinking to some very big picture to try to find some wisdom in that act. You know, so, you know, his additional spirit ministry doesn't lessen wars. It increases wars, right? I mean, you just have all the more, you know, zeal and fanaticism that can power wars and interpersonal strife. And right, I mean, that's initially it's not what we all are, you know, dreaming about. You know, some sort of idyllic, like they were just saying up there, utopia, right? right.
You want magic.
You know, that utopia, see, there's some truth to our dreaming about that in the post-Bestowal Son age, but don't go looking for it anytime soon. Yeah, because like he said, what I've done here is going to produce the exact opposite of peace. Right? It's not going to produce peace. You know, and so when he said peace on earth, goodwill among men, normally a bestowal son is seeing to the implementation of that idea. Right, that idea is not implementable. He can, you know, get you to hold up that ideal, but you know, don't get delusional and think that you can somehow, you know, manifest that idea. You know, that idea of being implementable is a long ways down the road yet, right? But you can certainly hold up the ideal of the bestowal son, peace on earth and goodwill among men. You know, instead of the Prince of Peace, right, who do we have still on this world? You know, despite the planetary adjudication of at Pentecost, right, you know, why did they coin the name Caligastia, you know, for him? Right, I mean, Calig means darkness, because you know we have a long-standing notion of a prince of darkness, right? And they're just reminding you that by the way they coined his name, the entity that is entirely darkness, Caligastia, right? The Prince of Darkness. Now that's who we have instead. The Prince of Peace left. You know, in person, you know, got the spirit ministry and everything, yes, but, you know, who's actually still here in body, right? Not the Prince of Peace, the Prince of Darkness.
So when he said, my peace I leave with you, it was the ideal of
peace. Yes, the ideal of peace. Right. But, you know, you're going to have to be very patient. You know, you can certainly find internal peace, right? If you seek first the kingdom of heaven, you know, which can be established within through your free will consecration, you know, but don't expect that, you know, kingdom of heaven to manifest out in the outer life anytime soon. You know, like it normally does in the post-apostolic sign age. The kingdom of heaven is literally out there. Okay, what else do we have there? I like that. Such salutary influences, you know, literally healthy influences, you know, beneficial influences, you know, for them to purposely use that word, you know, they're reminding you, don't be surprised if you look around and you think of the analogy of a disease, right, for the world that you're living amidst,
yeah.
Right? It's going to have a very diseased rather than a healthy quality to it. Very purposely using that word to make, you know, get you to think about that. Let's see. All right, you know, and you know, of course, you guys can, you know, on your own, you can do a little searching, you know, for those various contexts they're referring to. You know, there's a number of different places and a number of different ways when Jesus speaks about this, you know, like literally talking about, you know, ripping families in two, and the larger fraction of the family goes negative, you know, in his illustration because of what he's about to do. And so it's pretty, you know, pretty stern stuff that he describes. All right, but not to dwell on that too much right now. We've got two papers coming ahead that to go through the Lucifer Rebellion, right? So you're going, okay, so they've reminded us of this, the issues here. Are they going to give us any hints? You know, can they help us to better understand what it is that, you know, that we need to do? Now, we know there's a big problem. Is there anything I can do about it? So let's see what they say here.
Even on normal evolutionary worlds, the realization of the worldwide brotherhood of man is not an easy accomplishment. On a confused and disordered planet like Urantia, such an achievement requires a much longer time and necessitates far greater effort. Unaided social evolution can hardly achieve such happy results on a spiritually isolated sphere. Religious revelation is essential to the realization of brotherhood on Urantia. While Jesus has shown the way to the immediate attainment of spiritual brotherhood, the realization of social brotherhood on your world depends much on the achievement of the following personal transformations and planetary adjustments.
Okay, so there's a lot just right there. Let's just step through these points. Okay, so the first thing, they want to remind you, even on a normal evolutionary world, okay, this is not an easy accomplishment. Okay, so, you know, don't forget that right up front, they're telling you. Even under the best of circumstances, what we're talking about is highly non-trivial. Right? It isn't just a matter of everyone wishing world peace and ta-da, it happens. Never, ever. Okay? And it's a very, very difficult process that has to evolve. Right? They're reminding you, they didn't just say on a normal world, see, they did normal evolutionary, right? They're trying to remind you it's an evolutionary process. Okay, so that, you know, just take a deep breath, you know, think about a very, very long-term project, even under the best of circumstances. Now, however, they do contrast that. Okay, now on a confused and disordered planet like yours, all right, it requires much longer time and necessitates far greater effort. Okay, the time thing, right? We just went through that. So, you know, to get this normal, not quite, you know, but almost utopian state that they were just describing, you've got to go through, you know, at least, at a minimum, a couple of spans that we haven't had. Post-magisterial sun age, 25 to 50,000 years. Post-bestowal sun age, 10 to 100,000 years. Okay, normal. Much longer time, it says. Okay. And so we need to think in terms like that. This is nothing that any of us are even going to remotely, you know, experience while we're still alive. Right? Not our grandchildren, not our great-grandchildren, you know, not... Right? This is something that's way, way down the road. Right? Just, to, you know, even on a normal world, having 50,000 years of a magisterial sun age, post-magisterial sun age, still doesn't get you to this utopian sort of thing they're talking about. There may be another 100,000 years after that. At least 10,000. Right? The time scales are very long. You know, you need to pull back on the reins on your spiritual consciousness, you know, and teach it patience. This is a very long-term process. Well, we can have all kinds of sun's visit and whatnot, you know, and this doesn't just happen, right? It's none of them short-circuit the evolutionary process. It takes a long span of time.
But it doesn't really take that long when you consider it took dinosaurs, what, 25 or 50 million years to...
Right. We're not talking 100 million years here. Right.
Longer term to our lifespan,
Right. Right. So, you know, you've got to separate the time scale of your life, say, getting to fusion, and the time scale for the world getting to light and life. Those are very, very different time scales. Right. And if you start to kind of get a sense of how long you could... You know, it might be before you fuse, especially when they give you all this stuff about the mansion worlds and you try to speculate on how many years you're on each world. And you know, you're thinking, okay, well, it's not going to be too long. It's not going to be that long. Okay, it's different for a world because it isn't just an individual, right? Right. That whole process up to Gerasim is just you becoming definitively individuated. It's a very individual evolutionary process, developmental process. You have to have all of the individuals going through a process on a world, and no one lives very long. Right? No one lives as long as it takes you to get from here to the fifth mansion world.
And they all
right?
start out with a blank slate.
Right? And they all kind of, yeah, they all start out from scratch, basically, have to be taught. You know, in the age of light and life, babies don't come out of their mother's wombs, you know, with advanced philosophic minds. Right? They're a blank slate, just like everyone else. Right, so... And you've got all of the associative phenomenon, you know, of all those individuals developing. It's a very, very complicated process. Okay, so that's what they, you know, want to tell you up front. Just, you know, there's nothing more problematic than the fact that your spiritual consciousness wants to ignore time, wants to think existentially. I can think it, therefore why not? Right? Why can't it just be? Now, so okay, what can we do? Unaided social evolution can hardly achieve such happy results on a spiritually isolated sphere. Right? Okay, so if you don't have some sort of ubiquity of spiritual influence that is normal on a world, and again, like we've said, we don't really know what the heck they're talking about with that stuff. But what can you do? Well, none of those isolation issues affect what goes on in my inner life. Right? My inner life is free from that. As an individual, I can get myself under spiritual influence. I can start to be a phenomenon that isn't so bottom-up. It's more of a top-down phenomenon. Right? What do they say? Religious revelation is essential to the realization of brotherhood on Urantia. And your first thought, because of how we've been trained since we were born, is probably, ooh, some sort of like, you know, son from paradise doing a religious revelation. No. Religion is what? What's the definition of religion? Personal spiritual experience. It's not in the outer life. Right? See, that's what they're saying. There's something you can do. Right? You can't do anything about speeding up the evolution of the outer life. But you have almost complete control. You have sovereignty in your inner life. You can choose to get a new orientation going in your inner life, a top-down orientation, to establish yourself as a cosmic citizen. You know, something that's coming down from the cosmos rather than just something that's bubbling up from the dirt. Right? That's what they're telling you. There's something you can do. Now, and if a lot of people do that, that has a natural social consequence. Right? That will get socialized naturally. But you can't socialize nothing. Right? It's got to start with individuals. You can do the religious revelation thing. You can supply the favorable conditions where the cosmos can begin to more definitively impinge upon your inner life and have consequences. You know, that realization of the brotherhood on your rancho, right? That starts with, you know, that realization starts, that realityizing starts within. Right? Where, you know, that domain of energy that's immediately subject to your realitizing influence, your personality. Right? I don't have free will over the outer life. Right? And then they end it with, so it depends much on the achievements of the following personal transformations. You can definitely see that, like we were just talking, and planetary adjustments. There will be some natural things that develop. They're paralleling what they just said in the previous section. What is that? The end of the third from the last paragraph in the previous section. You notice in the section we just read, they said, while Jesus, right? They brought up Jesus. They did that back there, too. See the end of that that paragraph that starts the post-bestowal Sun Age? See how that paragraph ends? It says, the teachings of Jesus, remember we talked about this, the teachings of Jesus are really applicable to a mortal world which has had the preliminary training of the pre-bestowal sons with their dispensations of character ennoblement and culture augmentation. You know, like we said last week, I mean, the teachings of Jesus really aren't applicable to the world that we live in. Period. Right? It's delusional to think that they are. Right? Because it's sad to record that not only is it not applicable to the external world, you know, our outer life, it's almost, there's so few persons on your rancho for which it's even applicable in, you know, as an individual in their inner life. Because what are those two things? Character ennoblement. Right, it's sad to record that so few persons on your rancho have any character or ennoblement. Right, character ennoblement and culture augmentation. That's the same as personal transformations and planetary adjustments, like they just said. See, the two statements are parallel. Yeah. What are personal transformations? They're character ennoblement. You know, what's planetary adjustments? It's culture augmentation. Right. So if we yeah, and between the lines, it's a reminder. If we do what we can do, if we supply the favorable conditions where the cosmos can reach down and begin to lift us up, ennoble our minds, that will naturally manifest. And not only that, but if you do get your character ennobled like that, these other two ministries that we now have universally because of Pentecost can do something. The Spirit of Truth and the Thought Adjuster have the context to work in. Right? They can't work with an unennobled mind. Right? They can only reach down so far, those two ministries. And so not only will, you know, you've done your part, and it will naturally, you know, manifest outward, as more people do that and it socializes into the outer life. But there's these two accelerants, these two universal accelerating influences that can help us with the time scales we just talked about. You know, so maybe we don't have to do the 50,000 plus the 100,000. Maybe we can be more on the shorter, you know, scale of those processes.
Maybe.
Yeah, maybe, right?
Even though I guess
that's... Yeah, who knows? I mean, obviously,
it takes longer.
We know so little about the physics of what, you know, what we're talking about, it's hard to say anything definitive. But nonetheless...
So it says when Jesus has shown the way.
Yeah. See, to the immediate attainment of the spiritual brotherhood, right? So I'm glad you mind that. I just about forgot to mention that. Right. You know, what he showed the way and what can be immediate is the recognition and you know, the internal grasp, the assumption of the fact that we're kindred spirits. Right? That can happen immediately. You can recognize and take a hold of that fact that you and everyone else that does that are kindred spirits. That takes no time at all, essentially. But the brotherhood of man is kindred minds. Right? Kindred spirits is the potential for kindred minds. What Jesus showed the way for the immediate attainment of is the potential for the brotherhood of man, not the actual brotherhood of man. Like I said, he can't help to actualize the idea of peace on earth and goodwill among men, but he can give you the ideal that you can hold up of peace on earth and goodwill among men.
Why do you love one
another? That ideal is the potential, right? No, just in you don't have to do anything to have a potential be there. To just hold that up, that what you're striving for is not a bigger house. What you're striving for is peace on earth and goodwill among men. And you're going to do your little part toward that horizon point during your short little life. You're going to do something with a big picture in mind rather than just you in mind. Right? I mean, that would transform the entire planet radically, right? If everyone put a goal in front of them that was genuinely an ideal that's related to spirit, as opposed to an idea that related to their material life, and probably to nothing but themselves, right? You know, what are your goals? What, you know, what do you set before you? All your actions, they may have to be very, very mundane, but nonetheless, all your actions, what are they predicated on? What's the ideal that you hold up? Do you have a material ideal? Right? My ideal is to have no brown patches in my lawn. Is that what motivates your whole life? Right? If you don't tend to the lawn very fastidiously for one day, you know, brown starts to develop. Right? So you're very religious about it. Right? You know, and you know, anything else you can think of that has something to do with molecules, that has something to do with matter, anything, that's not what we're talking about. Not a material ideal, not a false ideal, a true ideal, right? You know, peace on earth and goodwill among men, where all those words are interpreted spiritually, not materially. If you interpret materially, right, you're getting to an idea. Just spiritually, right? Just to hold up the unity that would be present on the planet if there was the actuality of peace on earth and goodwill among men. You don't have the actuality, the matter arranged like that, but you can visualize the spirit energy that would be present in that system were that the case. What kind of spirit energy is associated with that material energy, if that material energy is the actuality of peace on earth and goodwill among men? Right? That's the ideal that you can hold up, long in advance of the proper arrangement of the molecules. Right? And you can live your whole life predicated on that, that's my ultimate motivation. Does this advance mankind one little nanometer towards that goal, right? Or is this just about me and my spiritual experiences, for instance? Is this just about me developing some mystical technique so I can have a sublime spiritual experience and bliss out?
anything like...
Where technically I could care less about the rest of the planet or its destiny. Right? It's all about you in the moment and your bliss. That is insanely selfish and of absolutely no use to mankind.
Anything like bringing God closer to man and man closer to God, is that...
Right? Right. If you set your eye on that ideal, that automatic, there's a reciprocal fact. God automatically draws closer to you the moment that you draw closer to Him, right? By literally setting that ideal before yourself, God and all of the spirit ministries draw closer to you, and you begin to get this top-down orientation of your nature. You begin to be reformed within. The whole motive for your life begins to evolve
that
towards
sounds
higher
like
things.
That character noblement that they right. were just mentioning.
And noblement,
it makes
yes.
me really be grateful for whatever the situation is, or struggles.
Yeah.
Those were really blessings in disguise to learn from.
Yeah.
Gratitude just. Yeah. Just pours over when you think about that.
We can easily get fixated on how the arrangement of molecules is not supposedly idyllic. You know, I wish this was arranged like that, etc. You got to let go of that.
And yet,
stuff.
We do have to arrange molecules as
right.
human beings.
Right.
It's just a matter of how you...
Right. It's just before you get to that, yeah, exactly. Before you get to that arrangement of molecules, have a spiritual motive in place. You know, don't make the matter an end in itself. Right? You know, have a genuine spiritual motive that then leads to a mindful intention that actually moves your hands and mouth and rearranges molecules. Have that spiritual motive behind it. You know, put some depth into it. See, it's not just a two-dimensional material thing that you want to rearrange as an end in itself. Well, I think it's prettier if I arrange it like this. You know, or I feel more content if I arrange it like this. Right? I'm not hungry if I arrange it like this. You know, I mean, yes, you have to worry about being, you know, not starving to death, right? You can't ignore that sort of stuff. But you want to have a genuine spiritual motivation behind overarching your life. Just, you know, trying to put that challenge forward. Something that Jesus tried to get the apostles to really wrap their minds around and couldn't, right? He just couldn't get them to abstract spirit from matter, to separate it.
Same thing now.
Yeah, right? And we're still stuck in that. We still get, because, you know, we have feelings. We get upset, things don't go our way, you know, and whatnot. We get wrapped up in that, and we easily lose sight of spirit. It becomes just about our mind and how it feels, you know, and its immediate relationship to matter. You know, and we're not a human when we're in that mode. We're just a fancy animal. A human has a third energy system involved. It has spirit.
Even while they're dealing with
those things. Right. So that there's something that can dominate mind, which dominates matter. Right? Right? So it isn't just about yourself and its desires, its immediate, you know, temporal desires, and how well you can assert that self on the environment and get your way. Right? You have higher things in mind. Yeah, you got something too?
A plumb line thing where you want, you know, especially when you're talking about spirit, when you want to align it, and so if you had an ideal, you could use it as a plumb line to keep going back to as your...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, however, whatever analogy kind of works, you know, how you can kind of feel the ideal, you know, it's a touchstone, it's a center line, a plumb line. You know, it's a center point. You know, there's all kinds of different ways you can analogize it. You know, but it's fundamentally your reference. You know, it's what everything is predicated on.
You have to work at it, right?
And you have to constantly reinforce that. Because material gravity will pull you down away from that, and it'll all just become about you and your immediate temporal issues again. You've got to choose to have spiritual gravity keep you connected to that ideal. Never lose sight of it. You know, gravity makes your chin drop and you start staring at your navel, right? You got to let spirit gravity keep your chin up and aim towards the horizon. Right, way in the distant horizon, there's peace on earth and goodwill among men. It's there. You can't see it, but it's there. Just start walking towards it. How would you walk knowing that it was there? As opposed to how do you walk when you think that what lies ahead is gloom and despair? Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, well, there's nothing on the horizon but gloom and despair. I might as well live for today. Get what I can, all I can. It's all about me, right? All right. Okay, so that's the main thing they wanted to set up is pick up on that statement they made, see, in the previous section about character ennoblement and culture augmentation and the relationship to Jesus. And just, you know, that too. Would you like to somehow be able to utilize the teachings of Jesus? To really not just imagine that you are, right? Like they're saying, and really not applicable until... You can do something about that. You can make it so that the life and teachings of Jesus actually have some place to be within you. He was speaking as if you had done something in advance. He wasn't assuming you were a blank slate. He was assuming there was already a structure there that he was going to build up, you know, build upon. Right? You need to, you know, do the precursors. This whole macroscopic evolutionary sequence that we're going through is your individual developmental sequence as well. You start as primitive man, and then you end up in the age of light and life. It's not just the world that goes through that sequence. Every person from conception, right, to fusion goes through that sequence. Right? So have you gone through the post-magisterial sun age as an individual? If you haven't, how are you going to make use of anything that a bestowal son does? You know, and if you haven't even done, you know, post-planetary prince stuff, right? Remember, Jesus reminded you that, like I keep doing. He says, well, remember, you got to do that stuff. Remember how back there normally there's fear not is ubiquitous. That's like really, really step one stuff. Way pre-magisterial son, the immediate precursor to bestowal son stuff. Right. So if you're still in primitive man stage where every moment of your life is fraught with fear, right, you haven't even done post-planetary prince, let alone post-Adamic, post-magisterial. You're way, Jesus' teachings are way not applicable to you. Right? There's no place for them to fit in, the reality of them. Right? You can remold them into your primitive image and appear to use them, right?
But, and yet we see
and
that.
Christians, you know, that's what Christianity is, right? They took the teachings of Jesus and, you know, and remolded them into a primitive shape and took off with them, right? If you make them look like Mithraism, you know, you can just appear to be following the teachings of Jesus. All right, so they're going to give us these, a few of these kind of key points, and you know, think about fundamentally what's in play. If you, you know, this religious revelation, right, if you genuinely bring unity into play in your inner life, it has all these associative consequences. The individuality and unity get together, and there's an associative consequence. They're going to speak about how that can, if you socialize that, you know, you have various associative manifestations on the planet that can come about. But there can't be these associativity manifestations they're about to describe if there isn't unity first. Because associativity is a superadditive consequence of the relationship between individuality and unity. So you got to bring the unity in, and then there can be these associative things. You can see like social fraternity. See, that's an associative phenomenon. Okay, so let's take them one at a time here. Oh, your question?
Yeah,
So we had the quote about, think not that I have come to bring peace upon the earth. And there's a little bit of confusion with Dennis there about, you said also soul struggle, and he seemed to recall another version of it.
There's a lot of versions. Well, yeah, there's the Bible sort of stuff. Right.
But
if you look in the book, do some searching in the book, and you'll see about the soul struggle. Right. You know, the analogy with the sword, remember that the spirit of truth is the sword. Right? Now, see, it doesn't come, as a warm, fuzzy blanket. Right? The spirit of truth comes as a sword, cutting you to the core, trying to cleave off what should be sloughed off. Right? The spirit of truth is ruthless, with error. Right? He's loosed the faithful lightning of his terrible swift sword. That's the spirit of truth. So again, when you think about how rugged the spirit of truth is like that, if I'm going to handle that safely, I probably have to have some precursors in place. Right? I have to have some character ennoblement, some relationship to the Holy Spirit, have some integrity, so that when I bring in that sword, it doesn't destroy me, right?
Yeah, because your choices, decisions.
Do you really want to be, if you're nothing but error, do you want to be judged? So you can see how it all fits together. And that's often avoided because, like we were just talking about, we want to just, pretend that there's this, we can just all think happy thoughts and then everything will be rosy. No, it's an evolutionary domain. Even on a normal world, it's not an easy accomplishment. Right? It requires great effort. And you know what comes after effort? Struggle and conflict. Right? Yeah. It's like, okay, well, if I just have to do effort, no, effort leads to struggle and struggle leads to conflict. Right? You've got to have the courage to take it all the way.
When you were talking about how the spirit of truth is this double-edged sword, or the sword.
Right, yeah.
And we're thinking about the spirit of truth now as the spirit of the whole.
Right.
So if it comes in and it does this cutting off of things that are not true and not cosmically aligned and not a true system, and not threefold with triunity around it. How is it doing that, or in a philosophical way?
I'm anthropomorphizing a little bit here, right? But just how it does that is just if you actually have the insight that it can give you, it immediately brings you face to face with how what you thought was a whole is just a part.
Challenge.
And it's this cherished thing that you have always believed was the whole. And it just blows that up. and you can't escape it. It's just as clear as day to you once the spirit of truth can actually, get the message across to you. Not a whole. Not even close. Beautiful's not the word I would use, it says to you. Quite ugly. It's like, gross. What do you mean ugly? That's my most cherished possession. See, it's a very rugged thing.
Disruptor.
It really disrupts all of your illusions. Right? And it's just, it's a clear recognition. Right, it's like, well, I wonder if maybe, see, that goes away. All of that six and one, half a dozen and another thing is taken away by the four insights.
It definitely disrupts the idea, and it is idealistic, right, idealism of unity.
Right.
Because we're not there.
Right, yeah.
It's just, yes,
exactly. Yep, exactly, yep. Oh, is there something else? Oh, yep.
Yeah, well, and what you're saying is, we can sit here in this room and we can sort of get it, but it's real, you have to be very humble and very understanding when you get it, but not, but everybody else around you is not getting it there, you know, and bless their hearts, you know, it's not, they just, so it's tricky being here today in this world, this particular time.
Yes.
When you get going through that, I mean, especially, you know, when you get to that point of who's having read the Revelation, understanding a whole lot more than most people, and then you really see, well, just like you said, well, this person, that's the most beautiful thing there is, you know, okay. Mm-hmm. You know, I can understand and relate to the fact that that seems that way to you.
Right.
But you don't go in and say, no, it's not, you know.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, it's tricky.
Because that's not your place.
It's tricky sometimes.
Right. You've got plenty to do with yourself. Right. You have no business in anyone else's business. Their growth is between them and God, not them and you. Right? Just let it be. Right? You can always improve yourself. Just because they're a little bit behind you doesn't mean that you're closer to eternity than they are. The distance between you and eternity is still an infinite distance.
But
right?
It's interesting because the fact that they are, you know, other part, you know, children of God just like you are, you can understand their viewpoint. Maybe you can learn to understand how other people think and what they said. When you really understand them.
Can you be tolerant?
We've all been there.
Right? Can you be tolerant of their immaturity? Right? Or do you get all self-righteous? You get a little bit of growth, and do you get all self-righteous and completely intolerant?
Interesting.
Yeah.
You missed the whole point.
Like Jesus sitting on the shore weeping because, or standing on the Mount of Olives.
Social fraternity. Okay. All right. Yeah, so let's take this first one here.
Number one, social fraternity. Multiplication of international and interracial social contacts and fraternal associations through travel, commerce, and competitive play. Development of a common language and the multiplication of multilinguists. The racial and national interchange of students, teachers, industrialists, and religious philosophers.
Okay, so just, you know, we don't need to go into great detail. All this, it's your job to do on your own, to reflect on it extensively. But just, like I said, just notice in each case how they're speaking about an improved associativity on the planet that could result by you as an individual choosing to have your life predicated on unity so that your individualities related to unity, and there's this associativity phenomenon within you that then begins to manifest outward. Just development of a common language. Wouldn't it be cool if there was this continuum of language? It wasn't all fractured. You start with that unity idea. It's like, we can't do that immediately, but we could start with the multiplication of multilinguists, and have that not be just so that you can be multilingual, but the reason to be multilingual is to facilitate getting to a common language. See, that's an example, like I said, you're thinking about why you're doing it. You're not doing it just to, to have a more complex phenomenon. You're doing it because you're trying to get towards some goal that's not normally held up, right? For many, the idea of a common language is an abomination, right?
What about tradition?
Right, yeah, what about tradition and whatnot, yeah. Let alone multiculturalism or something like that, right? Can you hold up that as an ideal, that common language is an ideal, and everyone should be striving for that? All right, so you're going to have this whole a multiplication of associativity, international, interracial.
You see this beginning to happen.
Right.
In modern times.
Right.
You can see things are...
It can't help but happen some because there's more spiritual influence for the last 2,000 years. Right. But they're just pointing out, that unaided social evolution can hardly achieve. Right. So you can't just let it go you know, you're going to have to choose to bring more unity into play than what just kind of is here naturally. Right? As an individual, you can't choose to bring more out there, but you can choose to bring more inside you, and then it'll get socialized out there. Right? That's what they're trying to do. You can augment this phenomenon. So it isn't just the natural social evolution that, like you said, we can definitely see for the last 2,000 years. Yeah? Oh, something up there? Yeah.
Yeah, Chris. They talked about exchange of students and that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
We've been doing that for some time. You know, that's been an exchange. But, you know, a lot of people will look at that and they'll interpret that as, oh, we need to keep our immigration wide open. And, you know, I don't think it's saying that.
You've
got to balance it off with some other parts of the book where we have to be choosy about the racial factors that we allow into the country.
Again, is there any paragraph in the book that I can just post on the wall and it embodies the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
Right.
Now, every paragraph, if you pull it out, you know, you've broken its relationship with the truth of the revelation. It's only in the full context of the revelation. So, yeah, every paragraph can be nothing but raw, unmitigated error in your interpretation of it if you pull it out of context.
Yeah, well, right? I think there's a mindset now that with this unity factor to spread all over, this unity of materialism, where people think the only way we're going to get over this is to bring them into our backyard to learn about their culture. And we can do it from a distance, and we can do it in wise ways, you know, like we've been doing it until just recently, where,
And like I said, see, that it's not our job, you know, here to try to flesh out all of the ramifications of these, but you can see, right? I mean, it should get your gears turning, and you can think about the potential problems of their statements, right? There's positives, negatives, you know, if you don't keep objective about what they're saying. All right, what else do they say here in the next one?
Two, intellectual cross-fertilization. Brotherhood is impossible on a world whose inhabitants are so primitive that they fail to recognize the folly of unmitigated selfishness. There must occur an exchange of national and racial literature. Each race must become familiar with the thoughts of all races. Each nation must know the feelings of all nations. Ignorance breeds suspicion, and suspicion is incompatible with the essential attitude of sympathy and love.
Okay, so again, just immediately, it's another reflection of associativity, intellectual cross-fertilization. And, you know, just, you know, when you read that, you know, like we were just talking, notice some of the immediate ways that you could get off on a false tangent, okay? Think about what they're saying there. It's very much a discussion about the slow, plodding, main evolutionary stream. Right, it's not about necessarily about you. If you pull yourself out of that evolutionary stream and really become that parallel core of the fifth epical revelation phenomenon, right? So you know you could easily misinterpret this and think, oh, okay, we should pull ourselves out of the stream and be like this. No, this is about that phenomenon you're pulling yourself out of, right? Now, and like I said, you need to decide, would you like to stay in the evolutionary stream and be a subtle, you know, slow influence for these sorts of things like they're describing? You know, the exchange of national and racial literature, getting all the nations to know the feelings of all the other nations, all these very kind of basic sorts of evolutionary things, right? That really aren't that different from what's going on right now, kind of naturally, but you just are kind of fostering it a little bit, right? Or, right? Do you see your mission really to, you know, to pull yourself out of that and be part of a developing little rivulet, right? A little parallel stream from that main evolutionary stream. There's a lot of things in the book like that, see, that you can misinterpret. So just keep that in mind. You don't have to limit yourself to the ignorance of others. You know, this, let me just say it that way, that I often do. Right? Don't think that the revelation is demanding that you must do these very minimal things in the evolutionary stream. Unless that seems to be exactly why you're alive today, and that's where you fit in as a subtle little catalyst in that process of, you know, fostering the exchange of literature, say, or something, right? Getting the religions to talk to one another, as opposed to saying, well, we really need to just let go of all the religions, right? You know, right? And step out of that evolutionary stream. See, that's a very different thing. Okay, what other associative thing?
3, ethical awakening. Only ethical consciousness can unmask the immorality of human intolerance and the sinfulness of fratricidal strife. Only a moral conscience can condemn the evils of national envy and racial jealousy. Only moral beings will ever seek for that spiritual insight which is essential to living the golden rule.
Okay, now you can see that they're also, you know, encouraging that you can get this top-down phenomenon where the ethics can be predicated on moral consciousness, that your duty to others can be predicated on your recognition and assumption of your duty to the cosmos. You know, so that duty to the cosmos flows down and out into a duty to others. But they're reminding you that, you know, that duty to the cosmos is an abstract thing. Now, the duty to others is much more tangible, right? And so they're reminding you that that really, you know, when you try to put it into application as a duty to others, you quickly sort out whether you have a genuine relationship to the cosmos or not. It can unmask, you know, the immorality, see, the lack of conformity with the cosmos. You know, in a pretty strong word, sinfulness, see. You know, you may discover that it's not just evil. It may actually be sin going on. So that's a pretty strong thing to say, that fratricidal strife there. Deliberate disloyalty to deity, not just disloyalty to deity.
Yeah. Basically, what's meant by fratricidal strife?
We're talking about the brotherhood of man.
Fratricide is...
Brother, fraternity, brother.
Okay.
Yeah.
Fratricide, okay.
Yeah.
The undoing of...
Strife right. Amongst the brotherhood of man. Yeah. You know, and, you know, just notice some things that are, you know, okay, national envy, you know, we all know that sorts of stuff, but think about how poignant the racial jealousy thing has gotten here in recent years. It's become very, very popular to put forward the notion of white privilege. That's racial jealousy. And that is evil, it says. Right, but many people harp upon that as if that was the fostering of goodness. No, that is the manifestation of evil. You are fostering evil in the world when you foster that notion. Right, that's racial jealousy. Right, you've got to get away from that. All men are not born equal. I mean, it may not be directly noticeable by light-colored skin, but it's inescapable that Adamic blood uplifts. It just does, right? That's not a delusional thing, a desire to lord over others with a false, you know, exaltation. No. If you've been biologically uplifted, you have a greater capacity than those who haven't been.
But you should be able to have more developed insight, morality, ethics, all of this consciousness, so you would have more tolerance, you'd have more sympathy.
Sure. Again, but you know, we're not talking about you know, I mean, you know, those who are crying white privilege are not white people, right? There's a lack of recognition that there's a difference, and it's just going to manifest.
It does call for that people to rise to the challenge.
You have to accept. Were the Alpheus twins jealous of their fellow apostles? No, they very objectively recognized their lower estate. Right. It's not some conspiracy to suppress them. That's just the way they are, and they accept themselves as they are. See, now that is pretty darn politically incorrect stuff, you know, that we're talking about right now. Right? But it is, it's just a fact.
Yeah. Well, one thing I've noticed of late is, well, there's a lot of talk about tolerance.
Yeah.
And most people recognize that we need to be tolerant. But often what people want, that's not tolerance that they're asking for, it's approval. And if you, mm-hmm. you may be tolerant, but if you withhold your approval, they become very intolerant, very quick. I mean, it's...
They want to be told that all thoughts are equally valid, right. That all minds are innately divine. They want you to adopt the Lucifer rebellion.
Yeah.
No, I will not do that.
Much of what's done in the name of tolerance, right. Not tolerance at all, but exactly the opposite.
See, that's the spiritual candy that Lucifer wrapped around all those sophistries, things like that, right? You know, it appears as you're doing good, but you're doing evil, right?
However,
right?
All souls have the same,
created
eternal potential.
Reality.
I see, again, can we separate created equal from born equal?
They can't.
Because you're not born equal. Right? Most people can't anymore. We could when we founded this country.
It's a damn blood.
The people who founded this country were the small subset of people on the planet amidst all those that were beginning to believe that everyone was born equal that said, no, that's false. They pulled themselves out of that morass of all those people in Europe who were believing that we were born equal and said, no, that is false. And it was just a small subset. Right? And it still is. There's only a small subset of people on the planet that can keep that separate, that can keep the spiritual separate from the material.
Okay. That's the difference between created and born.
Yes.
Yeah.
Created is about spirit. Born is about matter.
Right? So no matter who
you are. But if people aren't born into the spirit, they assume that means matter. Because right? That's the only dimension they know.
But see, it's just... And it's
and
just...
they're looking for...
But when you...
And like I said, I mean, the Alpheus twins knew they were equal in the eyes of God, but not equal in the eyes of the rest of reality. The angels didn't, you know, work with them equally to how they worked with Peter. And did they hate Peter for that? Were they jealous of Peter for that? Were they? No. Right. Yeah, if you happen to be gifted in a certain area and maybe you actually get one of those celestial artisans as for you as a muse, should I be jealous of you?
No.
I mean, again, see, that jealousy is because you're blurring the spiritual and the material together. Yeah.
Chris.
Yep.
When I was traveling in Ohio, and I stopped at some truck stops a few months ago, and... you know, I met a couple of African Americans, and they were both truck drivers, and they were both like, I would consider them born again. One guy came up to me when I was looking at one of Charles Stanley's books, How to Walk with God. I just found it fascinating. You know, I mean, this guy's talking about the forward, and this guy, and I just, you know, he had it, you know, but he's unusual. Yeah, I mean, he's not the norm, and he's just, you know, and it's same for another guy too, you know, and and it's very refreshing to come across that.
See,
you know, when somebody, you know, they're born in the spirit, but it's so rare. I mean, Jesus had to mildly upbraid Nicodemus. He says, how it is that you are an educated, you know, you're a teacher of Israel, and he was so educated, and you don't know about, you know, the second birth being born from above.
Right, see, and along that line, so just, again, to remind yourself what we're talking about here, there's always individuals, but we're not really talking so much about individuals. We're talking about the collective phenomenon of mankind, right? And so exceptions to the rule are irrelevant right now, right? Yeah, you're trying to just acknowledge the rule rather than delusionally expanding exceptions into the rule, right? Trying to recognize the basic facts. Face facts and adjust them to ideals. Right. I mean, someone who has racial jealousy hasn't faced facts and adjusted them to ideals, so they think unwisely and act unwisely. And in that regard, look at the next one.
4, political wisdom. Emotional maturity is essential to self-control. Only emotional maturity will ensure the substitution of international techniques of civilized adjudication for the barbarous arbitrament of war. Wise statesmen will sometimes work for the welfare of humanity, even while they strive to promote the interest of their national or racial groups. Selfish political sagacity is ultimately suicidal. Destructive of all those enduring qualities which ensure planetary group survival.
Okay, so here's that wisdom thing. Notice they've got self-control. Again, what can you do? Right? You can exercise self-control. That you're not dependent upon anything in the outer life for that. Right? And notice how they're tying that to emotional maturity. Right? Lack of emotional maturity indicates a lack of self-control, right? I mean, right, you're emoting. Things are going out. You're not controlling what is going out of you. Emotions are going out of you that shouldn't be going out of you, because your body is acting without control.
Sounds like teenagers.
And almost everyone else who is still effectively a teenager, even though they're 60 years old.
When you get to be 70.
Now notice, now the last part, everyone goes, oh yeah, I get that, selfish political sagacity is ultimately suicidal. Okay, but did you get the previous part, the previous sentence? Wise statesmen will sometime work for the welfare of humanity. Okay, did your thoughts stop there? Did you notice the rest of the sentence? Even while they strive to promote the interest of their national or racial groups. Right? We have so-called statesmen who are acting upon ideals. They're not wise statesmen, because our statesmen are working for the welfare of humanity at the expense of the interest of their national or racial group. Right. We hold that up as somehow, you know, the ideal, you know, that what we're striving for, right? No, that de-individuation. See, so again, just notice how, oh, well, everyone I thought was, I should hold up politically, you know, it just blew all them out of the water.
Right?
Can you think of someone who's actually a wise statesman, someone who's working for the welfare of humanity while they strive, okay, not just occasionally thinking about it, very actively striving to promote the interest of their national or racial group? Can you do both at the same time? Individuality and unity, not just unity. Or, you know, in this order, unity, individuality. Right? Right? There's no cosmic perspective. It's not wise. You know, it's completely biased to the unity end and is false. Right, that's, you see how they're, we don't have political wisdom right now.
Well, the way that can be done is through the structure. If you're striving to promote the interests of the national racial group,
mm-hmm.
and in the process of doing that, you're developing the a structure
for the whole.
There'll be something greater, mm-hmm. plus, you know, being done at the same time.
Right.
But if you're destructing, I mean, if you're doing it, if the structure is falling apart, there's
mm-hmm. right. See,
there's no unity when the structure's
falling. Yeah, think of someone who's working for the welfare of humanity who says they want a borderless world. See, that's false. You got all kinds of people saying that right now. No, they're not. They're not striving to promote the interests of their national or racial groups. Okay. National and racial groups have borders.
They want to wash out those
borders. Right, they want to wash out those borders.
Was Lincoln that way?
Well, of course not. You know, we're talking about current people, right? Lincoln is pre-middle of the 20th century, juicing the spiritual energy in everyone's mind, right? We've got all kinds. You can think about all kinds of examples of how we are not, demonstrating political wisdom. We're impassioned, we're not wise. Okay, and then, kind of more immediately to you internally here in the number five.
Can I say one before we leave that political thing? Is that thinking about the evolution, the slow evolution of the Supreme and our planet in particular from, developing into a true civilization. And the right now the people that are running for president or president or whatever, politicians, they seem to be really playing, some of them, on the ones that I think are not wise, on the sentiment that is being outgrown. It's the old mores. And they've really played on this sentiment, the American sentiment, and, well, are you American, all American? Are you really patriotic? And so
let's see, patriotism is promoting the interest of a national group, right?
Yeah, but we're like in a transition of the mores. They're having to adjust for us, and hopefully we're going forward.
Right, see, initially we moved away from patriotism, thinking we were going forward. It's like, well, no, you're recognizing there's more than just one nation on the planet, and that's an appropriate thing to recognize. And now we're fewer are starting to recognize you need to bring back patriotism and combine it with a recognition that there's more than one nation.
Yeah, because we need true nations.
Right. But see, there's no balance. Like I said, it's either all the one side, all to the individuality side, or all the way to the unity side. There's not both at the same time. They're trying to get you to think, no, you want both at the same time. Don't give up your nation in order to acquire the rest of the world.
But when you have world government, your nation.
Right, but we're a long, long, long ways away from the one, the world government thing, like they tell us in here, right? We'll get to that here in a minute. We don't have the internal integrity for one language, one religion, one government.
Let's look at the example of the United States, which they do use. You're saying instead of nation, each state has its whatever.
Right. We are the model. Yeah. Right. We didn't form a stateless nation. Right. We maintained the individuality and brought ourselves in relationship to unity. And that relationship to unity brought those individual states into association as the United States. There's individuality and unity. You can literally see the associativity. It's in the name of the country, the United States of America. Right? That's the thing. You didn't erase the borders around the states. It's not a borderless country, right, internally.
But you don't need paper.
Or the borders around the cities, or the border, you know, around the counties. Or
true.
You didn't erase that individuality. That's the thing you got. They're trying to get you to recognize. Okay.
Five, spiritual insight. The brotherhood of man is, after all, predicated on the recognition of the fatherhood of God. The quickest way to realize the brotherhood of man on Urantia is to effect the spiritual transformation of present-day humanity. The only technique for accelerating the natural trend of social evolution is that of applying spiritual pressure from above, thus augmenting moral insight while enhancing the soul capacity of every mortal to understand and love every other mortal. Mutual understanding and fraternal love are transcendent civilizers and mighty factors in the worldwide realization of the brotherhood of man.
Yeah. See, now again, everyone knows that paragraph, but have you been interpreting it as something to do with the outer life? Is the spiritual pressure from above something that's out there? No. No. In here, right? Spiritual insight, you're talking about this third cosmic intuition on the sixth level of meaning, right? There is a spiritual pressure that's out there already because of what Jesus, Michael did 2,000 years ago, okay? But you can't augment that, right? But they say here, the only technique for accelerating the natural trend of social evolution, how there's associativity evolving out there because there's unity imposed upon the system by Michael, right? Well, the only way you can do that is you as an individual, right? Right, you see, like I said, internally you can get it reoriented so it's top down. Right, the moral insight, that's on the fifth level of meaning. Right, the spiritual insight, that's on the sixth level of meaning. Instead of coming at your morality from the bottom up, they're saying, can you come at morality from the top down? Get up to spiritual insight and then go down to moral insight. See, thus augmenting moral insight.
So it happens on an individual basis.
And then get socialized.
Because everybody's doing it.
Right, right.
And so...
But you're not trying to somehow, you know, I'm going to somehow make there be more spiritual pressure out there. No, no. It's about you. And it's about self-control. Right? We're talking about controlling yourself to do this. Bring some spiritual pressure down upon your mind. Spirit dominates mind. That's the spirit.
Loving everyone? I mean, is that
what it means? Well, it will result in something in outer life, but nothing is going to happen in the outer life if it doesn't first happen in the inner life.
That's it.
Right. If you aren't something that has a moral consciousness that leads to an ethical consciousness of loving other people, predicated on spiritual insight, you aren't genuinely loving. Love is on the sixth level of meaning. They're trying to get you up to the sixth level of meaning so that what... You know, so that the fullness of the cosmos flows out.
In this case, love being the desire to do good to others, so to speak.
Right, yeah, yeah.
See, not like your wife and loving, so to speak.
Right, see, and the genuine desire to do good to others is predicated on you being good. Right? You have to be like the cosmos first. You can't be, a whited sepulcher full of dead man's bones and love someone else. Right? You have to get yourself right inside first. Recognition of personal responsibility and the assumption of self-control, like they just said.
Right?
It's like, well, I'm emoting to my fellow man, so I'm loving them. No, you're not. You're demonstrating lack of self-control, which means there's nothing top-down about your orientation at all. Right? If you can't control your emotions, you're a totally bottom-up phenomenon. Right.
But it takes practice.
Right. If you still have fear, you're bottom up. Because what's coming up from the bottom? Fear.
It doesn't mean you don't try or do it.
Right. Exactly. But see, again, just...
It just means you may not get better.
It's just having the courage to face that you're not born an adult of God. You're born a child of God. I mean, I think everyone can accept that. Jesus seemed to be fine with the fact that I was just a child of God. Why can't I be fine with it? Why do I have to constantly say, oh, but I think that I, no, I'm just a hopeless child of God right now that is very bottom up. There's nothing top down about me. Children of God are not top down. Children of God are bottom up. Adults of God are top down. Right? There's nothing natural about what we're talking about. It's an art form to get yourself reoriented and work top down. What you do naturally is bottom up. Children are natural. Adults are not. Adults are artificial. Adults are an art form. They're chosen. Developed. You don't naturally become an adult of God. You have to choose to become an adult of God. Right? And they tell you that point blank. There's nothing natural about getting to paradise. You have to absolutely choose every inch of the way. You don't get there naturally. Nothing automatic about it. All right. Okay. So, all right. So that's what they're getting at. You know, that spiritual pressure is, do you actually have spirit over mind going on inside of you? Or is it just mind over matter? And you haven't even discovered spirit yet. You call your mind over matter spirit over whatever. No, do you genuinely have, if you've gotten up above mind, get spirit impinging upon mind, impinging upon matter, controlling what you do in the outer life? Right?
Well, it sure is easy to get a religion of the mind.
Right.
Because first you think your mind is divine, and then you start rearranging molecules with it.
Yeah. Boom, it's pretty easy to have a religion of the mind because your consciousness is in your mind.
That's why
you gotta
do something.
You have to choose to go above that, right?
Initiate right. Into a higher.
Right. This spiritual insight, starting with a religion of the spirit, right? Bring spirit down upon mind, upon matter, and out.
But even if you have the desire to choose, etc., mm-hmm. You know,
it'll take a lot of time for that.
It doesn't.
Yeah, it doesn't just automatically. Now I'm totally top down. No. It's an evolutionary process to consecrate your mind.
But the desire helps.
You initiate it in the moment with a consecration of will. Right? Boom. But it's going to take a long time to actualize where you become, you know, naturally a top-down phenomenon. The consecration of your mind is spread out over time. Consecration of will is in the moment. Relationship to the mother is spread out over time. Relationship to the father is in the moment. That fundamental difference. Okay.
If you could be transplanted from your backward and confused world to some normal planet now in the post-bestowal sun age, you would think you had been transplanted to the heaven of your traditions. You would hardly believe that you were observing the normal evolutionary workings of a mortal sphere of human habitation. These worlds are in the spiritual circuits of their realm, and they enjoy all the advantages of the universe broadcasts and the reflectivity services of the super universes.
Okay. Yeah. I bring this up, you know, all the time, remember. You know, see, you would hardly believe. Right? In other words, it's basically beyond your wildest imagination, right? You know, if you extend, it's like maybe you get the slightest little hint of this, but yeah, basically beyond your imagination.
I can't even imagine what value it would have, right? To hear the universe broadcast.
They'd have to put you in a beaker to transport you there to safety.
Okay, so you know, and see again, they're reminding you there's all of this spirit energy stuff that they never explain in the book. Remember, they really don't give us almost nothing about spirit energy physics. You know, they don't reveal the spirit controller beings in any detail. All of this change in the spirit energy on a world from dispensation to dispensation, they don't, you know, we don't know anything about all that. These worlds are in the spiritual circuits of their realm. We have no idea what that means. All we know is that there's, you know, it means that there's some much more definitive unity engaging the individuality, and associativity happens much more profoundly, naturally. But, yeah. But that's, and then, of course, you've also got the broadcast circuits. You know.
We can think about the spirit circuits as being really a substance, can't we?
Yeah, right, literally, right? I mean, I mean, for metaphor. Them to say this, for, yeah, like I said, it's literally there's some, you know, if you can see spirit substance, there's stuff in the environment that isn't here right now.
Not just the magic.
And we're not just talking Holy Spirit, Spirit of Truth, you know, that's, no, we're talking about all this non-spirit ministry from creator beings sort of stuff that we know nothing about, that they basically don't talk about, except just, you know, allude to it. Okay? We really don't know what it all means. All right, let's see if we can get to the post-teacher son here.
Section 7, post-teacher son man. The sons of the next order to arrive on the average evolutionary world are the Trinity teacher sons, the divine sons of the Paradise Trinity. Again, we find Urantia out of step with its sister spheres in that your Jesus has promised to return. That promise he will certainly fulfill, but no one knows whether his second coming will precede or follow the appearance of magisterial or teacher sons of on Urantia.
Again, remember, there's normally magisterial sons after the bestowal son. Instead of having one or, you know, or more before, we got them all after, like we've talked about. Just one little thing there that they're trying to emphasize: divine sons of the Paradise Trinity, right? To challenge yourself to bring in, you know, that fourth element. You know, think about the three preceding dispensations. You know, they're respectively about matter, mind, and spirit. Right? The biologic uplifter, the intellectual uplifter, the spiritual uplifter. Matter, mind, spirit. The subsequent dispensation is about the whole. Right? These Trinity teacher sons come to really improve your relationship to the whole, whereas those three prior ones were boosting your relationship to the part, in a sense, right? In a big sense. There's always an improving relationship to the whole. It started with the planetary prince, but now you're really going to get to that directly, right? The whole is the Paradise Trinity. Not the Father, not the Son, not the Spirit.
Not the Supreme.
First and foremost, the Trinity, as you'll see in a minute here. The Supreme stems from the Trinity. You're going to identify with the Source. Right? That's what the Trinity teacher sons are coming to do. You let go of that Trinity of Christendom, right? You know, we're not talking about the first triunity here. We're talking about the Paradise Trinity, a fourth fact.
Chris.
Yep.
In the foreword, it mentions that a complete understanding, if I'm using the right words, probably not, but similar words, from our minds, our mortal minds, is the Supreme, but they give us everything behind the Supreme or before the Supreme, I think, to help to get that, but we can't have partial understanding of these things before it, but by this time, because of our limitations of our minds, but by this time, would our minds be of the nature that we could go beyond the Supreme to the Absonite and really have full understanding?
Technically, you know, first you try to identify with the Paradise Trinity, next comes the Mother Deity, that immediately stems from the Trinity. You can then bring that Mother Deity relationship into relationship with the Almighty, and then you can get the super additive consequence of relationship to the Supreme. Right? It's a whole complex thing, but it begins, you know, you got to begin with the personal purposive part of the Supreme, the Mother, which is stemming from the Paradise Trinity. You know, like they say up in the foreword, you know, the personal and spiritual nature of the Supreme Being comes from the Paradise Trinity, right? Not from the Father, the Son, or the Spirit.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's, Yeah, that's the whole point. Set aside all that stuff, really. It's just, think about it just in terms of, you're now going to, these Trinity teacher sons are really going to try to teach these people to kind of think more like you do naturally with Marantia mind, to relate to the whole directly, as opposed to the parts and synthesizing them into a relationship with the whole, but to begin to relate to the whole directly, right? To begin to have the beginnings of a moda-like consciousness, even when you still just have an agitant mind, right? To relate to the whole.
From the class that we had, the cosmic calibration class, I did a little reading and research in the book, and something that really helped me, at least a little bit, to understand the Trinity better, the Paradise Trinity, was that it's undividable. To think of the whole not as just a system of parts, but it's undividable. You can't divide it. It's that kind of whole is more than anything that anybody's ever taught on this planet, and it's just so new and different. Even for your Uranchma creator.
Yeah. For those of you on the webinar, she's talking about. Let me just give you that because that's a good little thought. Remember how they tell you that the paradise, the kind of deity that is the Paradise Trinity, is they say it's undivided deity. And to recognize it's undividable deity, you start with something that's in part dividable and in part not. And you divide out that which is dividable. And you get the Father, the Son, and the Spirit. But what remains above them, the undividable deity, the undivided deity, is the whole, right? The fundamental essence of the whole, the Paradise Trinity. Something that those three divided parts put themselves in cooperative subordination to, right? They're under that sealing of the whole, right? You're trying to penetrate up to that. And the Trinity teacher sons begin to help you with that. Right?
The teacher sons come in groups to the spiritualizing worlds. A planetary teacher son is assisted and supported by 70 primary sons, 12 secondary sons, and 3 of the highest and most experienced of the Supreme Order of Danels. This core will remain for some time on the world, long enough to effect the transition from the evolutionary ages to the era of light and life, not less than 1,000 years of planetary time, and often considerably longer. This mission is a Trinity contribution to the antecedent efforts of all the divine personalities who have ministered to an inhabited world.
Just the basic thing there is they're giving you a little bit more detailed information than they gave you before when we talked about the Trinity Teacher Sons. They pointed out that they were assisted by 70. Now we've got a little bit more detail. We have assisted and supported, and we've got them talking about these categories of Trinity Teacher Sons that they haven't talked about before. They don't explain it very well, but there's primaries, secondaries, supreme order. Okay, so they're giving you little hints here. They apparently can't tell us very much about the details. But you have more than that 70 they mentioned. You've got 12 and 3. And then also, it's not just 1,000. It's not as simple as that. It's not less than 1,000 years, and often considerably longer. So they're not, you didn't get that before. So they're basically just giving you that really quick sketch they gave you before and expanding on it a little bit. So that's the details there. Tantalizing little hints to try to figure out what's the difference between a primary and a secondary, and what's the difference between assisting and supporting, and who knows. But anyway, this is the main thing is you get from it. It's a rather complicated thing. See that's happening. Does that seem to be aligned with what I was just saying a minute ago? I mean, one magisterial son can help you get a part-wise improvement, but it probably takes quite a collection and quite a coordinated effort, a group of beings to improve your relationship to the whole, because the whole is complex. Right? See, so not surprisingly, it's not a singular ministry. It's not even a magisterial son with 12 Melchizedeks. It's a lot more complicated than that. Right? Very complicated. The 70 is obviously, see, because you've got the sevenfold of spirit, the tenfold of physical, and the 70 associations. See, it's all that full complexity. Not to mention you got the 12-foldness that, is another one of the patterns that comes in, and the 3-foldness. See, there's all of these different patterns all together. 7, 10, 12, 3, etc. Okay, so of the full complexity.
The revelation of truth is now extended to the central universe and to paradise. The races are becoming highly spiritual. A great people has evolved and a great age is approaching. The educational, economic, and administrative systems of the planet are undergoing radical transformations. New values and relationships are being established. The kingdom of heaven is appearing on earth, and the glory of God is being shed abroad in the world.
So the kingdom of heaven is going from within to without, finally. See, it's finally gotten to the point where the kingdom can start to actually manifest without. And like I was saying, see, it's going to take a long time to get to the point where there's enough withinness where it actually begins to genuinely manifest in the outer life. Right? Yeah, and, how appropriate is it that you're actually getting the central universe now revealed all the way up? Right? Havona is the domain of which fact? The Father, the Son, the Spirit, or the Trinity? The Trinity, right? right. See, so you're getting that Trinity, sort of fundamental foothold of the Trinity in the universe of universes being revealed through the Trinity teacher sons.
The pattern's
always so consistent. Right, always so consistent. See, so, and it's just because of that consistency, it's waiting for your philosophic quality of mind, right? Because the hallmark of a philosophic mind is consistency. If you have consistency, you'll notice the consistency in the revelation. And they don't have to tell you all those things. You go, that makes sense. Or you'll pick up on them. Is there something? Okay.
So this is the patterns on normal. Mm-hmm. That's supposed to normally unfold in the universe, etc. And you can see, as you look at this from looking at from the whole point of view, if you can, how incredibly together it all is, how it seems to work out. And when you look at all, and number one, and we're so far off beats, etc., and all this stuff is going to happen in a long, long period of time as far as we're concerned. But it seems, to me, it's very comforting to see, that there is really a master plan for all this, and when people get to those periods in their existence, the beings that are there, have a different experience, and every single person on all these worlds who are experiencing this through all these stages are all having a different experience, or their own experience, to put it that way, which is quite mind-boggling when you consider it all. It's like, whoa.
Yeah, and even for all the revelators, they live in that same recognition that they know that despite their limited perspective, there literally is a master plan for the universe of universes. The master architects, right? None of the revelators, know the details of the master plan, but they all know it exists. And they all live in that and trust in that fact, that no matter how confused it might appear, right, there's an absonite plan imposed upon the finite domain by the master architects. And no finite phenomenon can get out of the influence, the over-control of an absonite plan.
Well, we've said many times, like, it's the, we'll call it the finite, you know, the evolution, perfecting. To eventually, you know, it gets to some point where it's somewhat analogous to the central universe.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But it got there in a different way. It wasn't just fiated that way.
Right.
It's evolving that way.
Yeah.
And then it makes you start thinking about the outer universes of the ultimate in the years to come. You know, as you talk about it from an abstract point of view, which you really don't understand too much, you have a glimpse of it, whatever, how that would then grow to be able to create to that point. So for us, here we are, you know, we're kind of like in the, you know, maybe in the middle of the time span, if you look at different things, maybe in the little part, you know, past the middle, and we're, you know, really challenging beginning light from in this world. But as we grow through all this, you know, you can just sort of get glimpses of, you know, what this is all going to mean. You know, as you see it unfold in the eons of the future, to me, it's like extremely exciting. Or, you know, it's like it's very, you know, yes, you have to have patience and wait for it, but you know, it really kind of changes your whole outlook on life. You know, it's a whole lot more. Gives you more meaning and understanding and patience and so on and so forth. But more than that, it kind of makes you really love God. It just, I don't know, it just makes that.
Yeah, and just, and to bring it home, just think about what I said a little bit ago. Not only is this happening, this master plan happening in this, in the big picture, in the macroscopic. Remember, you parallel this in your individual development. Right?
Yeah.
So just as all the worlds will go through this, so do you, right? Trust in that. Just be patient, you know? As long as you're supplying the favorable conditions, you will unfold in parallel to this. Just let it, let that unfold.
Faith to trust.
Yep. Trust and be patient in your development. Yeah, take heart in that. Okay, let's keep going here.
This is the dispensation when many mortals are translated from among the living. As the era of Trinity teacher sons progresses, the spiritual allegiance of the mortals of time becomes more and more universal. Natural death becomes less frequent as the adjusters increasingly fuse with their subjects during the lifetime in the flesh. The planet eventually is classed as of the primary modified order of mortal ascension.
Right, so remember, we read about that. You're moving to the point where when people fuse, like they're doing more and more, you know, they're jumping all the way to the local universe headquarters.
Really?
Straight to selling.
Right.
Yeah.
And then, you know, they work back, of course, as teachers, remember. Right, but the primary modified, you know, they're jumping all the way to Salvington. You know, they wake up out of their mortal life, in our case, right, and at the local universe headquarters.
Well, they don't go 10 days on each.
They're skipping over all that.
When they resurrect.
And they resurrect, they're resurrected in the resurrection halls of the local universe headquarters.
They're that far advanced.
Yeah. Right. So again, just, you know, remind yourself what we're talking about, how far we are from this, right? To be able to skip over, you know, all the mansion worlds, Gerasim, all the constellation worlds, right, all of that stuff.
So they remember a lot more than we do.
Right. And we can't even imagine the first mansion world. Okay, and we're not only skipping over it, but everything, you know, beyond. Right. These mortals are very advanced relative to us, right? And the spiritual allegiance of the mortals of time becomes more and more universal. Think about that, you know, how long it takes. I want the spiritual allegiance of, you know, to be tomorrow. No. This is a long process. It's not the illusion of spiritual allegiance, it's the reality of spiritual allegiance. And that takes a very long time to realityize.
So way after this revelation is gone.
Right. You know, remember, we're talking about tens of thousands of years, right? Right?
Yeah.
Long time. Okay.
Life during this era is pleasant and profitable. Degeneracy and the antisocial end products of the long evolutionary struggle have been virtually obliterated. The length of life approaches 500 Urantia years, and the reproductive rate of racial increase is intelligently controlled. An entirely new order of society has arrived. There are still great differences among mortals, but the state of society more nearly approaches the ideal of social brotherhood and spiritual equality. Representative government is vanishing, and the world is passing under the rule of individual self-control. The function of government is chiefly directed to collective tasks of social administration and economic coordination. The golden age is coming on apace. The temporal goal of the long and intense planetary evolutionary struggle is in sight. The reward of the ages is soon to be realized. The wisdom of the gods is about to be manifested.
Now again, our future is a long and intense planetary evolutionary struggle. Right? That's the evolutionary process. That's what it means to say we don't live in the central universe. That everything is a long struggle, inherently. You got the whole, you're finally getting to the maximum, you know, approaching 500 years. And notice the one little, you know, all of these issues, these eugenics issues, you notice they've been occasionally mentioning them, like I told you they would, and they keep tweaking them. You know, back here we had degeneracy has already been largely eliminated. Okay, and here we have degeneracy has been virtually obliterated. Right. Like I said, you know, there's, you know, just tweaking it ever closer, you know, to the point where technically it's just not there anymore, right? It's virtually obliterated. Right, but it went from largely to virtually.
And yet they still have economics.
Right, you have an economy in Havona, right? You have the economy of Havona.
Economic necessity ties us.
There's always the laws of the house. Remember, economy means the laws of the house, right? You know, and what are they saying about the laws of the house? You know, it's like in Havona a lot more. I mean, the law is written in your heart, right? You're basically a fully self-controlled phenomenon, no external control required. Right? It's not because, you know, you don't need external control because you're somehow automatically, you know, as you should be. No, you are very precisely and constantly, every instant, controlling yourself. You have to control yourself. It isn't automatic, ever. Right? Michael doesn't rebel because in every instance he chooses not to rebel. It's not because he can just, you know, forget about it and it'll just automatically happen that he won't rebel. He has to choose every moment to not rebel. Right? He has complete self-control.
Would you say that would be, or I don't know the right word to use, but somehow connected to coordinate subordination?
Cooperative subordination?
Yes.
Right. Right. When you have complete self-control, you've put yourself in complete cooperative subordination to the Paradise Trinity. Right. You know, where do the justice administrators in the universe of universes come from? Who are they the offspring of?
Trinity.
Paradise Trinity. Right? Right? Think about the consistency of all this. Right, you know, see, these Trinity teacher sons are going to work on getting you in full cooperative subordination to the Paradise Trinity. So that the law is written in your heart. Right? Okay, but until then, right, until you have that definitive connection to the Paradise Trinity, right, there needs to be external constraints. Okay.
The physical administration of a world during this age requires about 1 hour each day on the part of every adult individual. That is the equivalent of one Urantia hour. The planet is in close touch with universe affairs, and its people scan the latest broadcasts with the same keen interest you now manifest in the latest editions of your daily newspapers. This is already dated.
The newspapers can be online, it's okay.
These races are occupied with a thousand things of interest unknown on your world.
Yeah, see, so that little reminder at the end. Again, remember, I mean, don't think that you really understand anything that they're talking about here. This is so completely beyond our imagination, in its specificity. But, you know, they give you little tidbits like, okay, so back in the post-magisterial sun age, we had 2.5 hours, right, to take care of the basics. And after all of that time, you know, tens of thousands of years, okay, we finally have it down to an hour. Right, so just a reminder of how slow this process is.
What do we do with the other hours?
things God. Of interest unknown on your world.
Cable,
right.
Play golf.
Okay, so, so just, you know, I mean, that should, you know, they give you that little example to kind of, because arithmetically it doesn't seem, it seems like it's not very far from 2.5 to 1, you know, and it doesn't seem to make sense. It's like, well, I've got all of this geometric potential now because I have all this relationship to spirit. And yet it still takes that long to go that seemingly short distance. They're reminding you that the climb gets steeper, right? It's like in Havona, right? The climb on the first circuits, the first five circuits, is relatively shallow. Wait till you see the climb after you've personally recognized the Father on the third circuit. Wait till you see how steep it is on the second and first circuits, like we talk about all the time. See, that they're reminding you, that parallel to that. You know, it starts to get very, very steep. You know, it takes great effort to eke out those last little bits, to go from largely to virtually, for instance, right? Which seems like just a shadow of a hair's turning, but no, it takes this incredible, because it's a very, very steep climb.
Similar to how you've emoted in the past, climbing from third circular to first circular.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, very similar.
Yeah. Yeah, all these things, you know, there's just, you need that geometric thing because the climb is not, you know, linear anymore. It's this very sharp curving thing that you need, you know, some sort of a non-linear nature to relate to. Okay.
Increasingly, true planetary allegiance to the Supreme Being grows. Generation after generation, more and more of the race step into line with those who practice justice and live mercy. Slowly but surely, the world is being won to the joyous service of the sons of God. The physical difficulties and material problems have been largely solved. The planet is ripening for advanced life and a more settled existence.
Notice the little tip of the hat to the Old Testament there, to Micah. Anyone know? Now that when they say practice justice and live mercy,
I hear that
to do justly, right? Love mercy and walk humbly with your God, right? Yeah, and you see the next sentence: slowly but surely, the world is being won to the joyous service of the sons of God. I see they're actually wanting to remind you of that little parallel: do justly, love mercy, and walk humbly with your God. And there's the Supreme Being, like we see pointed out before. Yeah, remember the personal spirit nature, you know, the Supreme Being comes from the Paradise Trinity, right? So you start with that, and like I said, you can bring in the Almighty and get the super additive consequence. You begin to have, you know, a relationship to the Supreme Being effectively, you know, not literally because it's absentite being, but you know, the supreme being manifest as the universal mother and the almighty supreme down here in the finite, right? And you're starting to begin to be kind of in that finaliter mode, you know, where you take an oath to the Paradise Trinity, right? And you're starting to be dedicated to working out in the universe of universes for the supreme being, right? You know, working with the supreme being's assistance down here. And right, see, so you can see that the worlds are beginning to shift into that mode where they can begin to come under the influence of the finaliters working towards supremacy. Yeah, so that's what's going on.
From time to time throughout their dispensations, teacher sons continue to come to these peaceful worlds. They do not leave a world until they observe that the evolutionary plan, as it concerns that planet, is working smoothly. A magisterial son of judgment usually accompanies the teacher sons on their successive missions, while another such son functions at the time of their departure, and these judicial actions continue from age to age throughout the duration of the mortal regime of time and space.
The usually accompanies, I mean, you know, if they have multiple dispensations of Trinity teacher sons, I mean, there's going to be a magisterial son as a, you know, there to adjudicate, you know, that judicial action. There's Trinity teacher sons here right now, planning for way in the future when they'll come as a dispensation, right? But, you know, a magisterial son didn't come to adjudicate or anything, you know. Right? So, I mean, sometimes the Trinity teacher sons are coming separate from these dispensational visits. That's why they threw the usually in there. But in the spirit of what we're talking about, dispensations, you always have an adjudication.
So they still have dispensations even though they're refusing?
Yeah, right. So
resurrecting a bunch of people.
There could be many, many of these, you know, thousand-esque, you know, year-long dispensations of Trinity teacher sons. You know, maybe there's 50 of them. And finally, after 50 of them, then you finally get to light and life. Yeah, that's what they're trying to point out. Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, apparently sometimes it just takes 1,000 years then, but depending upon the world. Yeah.
Each recurring mission of the Trinity Teacher Sons successively exalts such a supernal world to ever ascending heights of wisdom, spirituality, and cosmic illumination. But the noble natives of such a sphere are still finite and mortal. Nothing is perfect. Nevertheless, there is evolving a quality of near perfection in the operation of an imperfect world and in the lives of its human inhabitants.
Again, just nothing is perfect even here, right? Everything between now and the grand universe being settled in light and life is not perfect. It's perfecting. Yes. Right. You know, and can you allow for that? Something that's so transcendently better than what you can imagine right now, and yet it is not perfect. Now, if you can challenge yourself with that way, you'll have a better idea of how far you are from paradise, right? And you from being finitely perfect, right? Perfect is a word that's a lot bigger in the Urantia book than humans have ever used the word, right? Perfect is very, very far removed.
You know, in mathematics, there's what's it called?
An asymptote?
Asymptote, yeah. Mm-hmm. I had that, but I didn't trust that I knew it.
Yep.
Where it's coming closer and closer and closer, but it's never touching.
Yeah. Yes.
I was
visualizing that. It's good that you picked up on that. You know, and I'm talking about going from largely to virtually and things like that. Right. See, right. It's this asymptotic thing, and it takes more and more to eke out a little bit. You know, like if you think of an asymptotic thing, for it to get, you know, just a tiny fraction closer to the line it's asymptoting to, it's got to go an incredibly long distance. See, that's the analogy of what they're talking about. You got to go this very long distance to get 1 nanometer closer to the line you're asymptoting to, right? And it just, you know, more and more so. And see, the only way, see, and you're like, well, we'll never get to the line because it's asymptotic. Yeah. In and of ourselves, we can't transcend the finite. We can only asymptote, you know, to supremacy. The supreme being has to reach down and lift us all up out of the finite to actually get us to cross that line. We can't self-cross it because we're asymptoting to it. We never cross it ourselves.
You're talking about when everyone crosses.
When the grand universe is set, yeah. Remember, he gives you a fragment, another spirit fragment that uplifts you to a seventh stage spirit, lifts you up out of the finite. Right.
When we're talking about perfect form, nothing's perfect. But we do reach a little glimpse of that when we go into Vana because we have a perfection of purpose.
Right. I mean, there's, but again, see, we're talking about to get to perfect, you got to go in there. They're just reminding you that everything that's fundamentally out here is perfecting, right? Yeah.
The Trinity teacher sons may return many times to the same world, but sooner or later, in connection with the termination of one of their missions, the planetary prince is elevated to the position of planetary sovereign. And the system sovereign appears to proclaim the entrance of such a world upon the era of light and life.
Can you read the next one too?
It was the conclusion of the terminal mission of the teacher sons, at least that would be the chronology on a normal world, that John wrote. I saw a new heaven and a new earth in the new Jerusalem coming down from God out of heaven, prepared as a princess adorned for the prince.
They're going to give us some Bible quotes, you know, tweaked as always. And you can look them up and notice how they've tweaked them. But, you know, that, of course, is from the book of Revelation, Revelation of John. That's the 21st chapter, if I'm remembering correctly, right at the beginning. You know, that's where they get the new heaven, new earth, new Jerusalem, as I've mentioned many times, you know, where they get the word Havon, you know, Havona is the quote-unquote new heaven. Gerasim is the, you know, is the new Jerusalem, and the new earth is Urantia. Right? The coining of those three words, based upon that passage. I think it's the first two verses of chapter 21, if I remember correctly. Okay.
This is the same renovated earth, the advanced planetary stage, that the older seer seer envisioned when he wrote, "For as the new heavens and the new earth, which I will make, shall remain before me, so shall you and your children survive. And it shall come to pass that one new moon to another, and from one Sabbath to another, all flesh shall come to worship before me, says the Lord."
And that's from Isaiah. See, so what they're doing here, see, is they're pointing out there's a truth to some of these passages, you know, but it's tied to, you know, getting towards light and life and stuff, right? You know, yeah, they're just trying to, you know, to get you to take it out of the limited factual context that it is in the Bible, see that there is a truth nonetheless flowing through it. You know, that's from the 66th. The last chapter of Isaiah.
It is the mortals of such an age who are described as, quote, a chosen generation, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, an exalted people, and you shall show forth the praises of him who has called you out of darkness into this marvelous light.
Okay, and this one, that's from 1 Peter. So just the same thing again. Instead of thinking of it, you know, in that New Testament context of 1 Peter, you know, where he's, you know, as if it's talking about the people 2,000 years ago in front of him. It's like, no, factually, yeah, but truthfully, you take that to pushing on light and life, right?
No matter what the special natural history of an individual planet may be, no difference whether a realm has been wholly loyal, tainted with evil, or cursed by sin, no matter what the antecedents may be, Sooner or later, the grace of God and the ministry of angels will usher in the day of the advent of the Trinity teacher sons, and their departure, following their final mission, will inaugurate this superb era of light and life.
Wow. Read the next one too.
All the worlds of Satania can join in the hope of the one who wrote, "Nevertheless, we, in according to his promise, look for a new heaven and a new earth wherein dwells righteousness. Wherefore, beloved, seeing that you look for such things, be diligent that you may be found by him in peace, without spot and blameless."
And that's from 2 Peter. Yeah, see, so just 1 Peter, 2 Peter, pairing there. And see what they're doing, what I was pointing out, you know, how you can take those passages even in the Bible and do what I was, you know, encouraging up front here. You know, get this ideal out in front of you. Stop thinking of these passages factually and materially, right? But think of them spiritually, as an ideal that you can set your sights toward, knowing that it's valid to do that because one day that will be a fact. It will be an actuality in the outer life of this world. So it's not delusional. You know, it's not wishful thinking. Many things that you can set your sight to are wishful thinking. They're trying to give you, something real to set your sights to.
Taken out of context, right? They sound silly. Mm-hmm. But in context,
there's a truth to these things. And set your sights towards that. Act knowing that the Supreme will use your little actions towards this end. The acts are ours, the consequences are God's. And that God is God the Supreme, remember, not God the Father. Right? God the Supreme will take what little you do and direct it towards this end. You can trust that. Right? And like they said, see, the increasingly true planetary allegiance to the Supreme Being grows. More and more, everyone lives trusting that all of their little actions, right, will be taken towards these ends by God the Supreme, by that top-down influence on the finite domain. Right? Everyone is beginning to live, you know, in the total certainty of that. Okay? We need to, they're encouraging us to start doing that too.
So that also means in their personal lives, they've come to the point where, as a people, they habitually choose that higher, that top-down
yes.
point of view.
Yes, they do. And
habitually choose it.
And what they habitually
develop the habit.
Yes, and what they habitually choose like that is an evolutionary reality, rather than an existential delusion. Right? Right now there's lots of humans, you know, that try to predicate their lives on an existential delusion, right? This false injection of the existential father into this domain. No, this domain is over-controlled not by God the Father, it's over-controlled by God the Supreme, evolutionary deity, not existential deity. And you need to begin to think in those terms.
And
you can see how that, you know, that fits in with, you know, everything we're talking about, the patience, the allowing for the time, right? Okay. Oh.
Well, I see a twofold thing. It's like the decision, one decision becomes simpler, but the solutions to problems becomes more complex.
Yes, 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 exactly. Right. And fundamentally, the solutions are not imaginable. You just need to do what is tangible in the moment, trusting that it all goes forward in a way that you can't envision right now. Right? That's what trust is for. You don't need trust if you can see to the end from the beginning. Right? You act. Acts are ours, the consequences of God. Just act. Trust that God the Supreme will use that to good ends. Right? Don't get stuck like we are right now. No one will act anymore. because they're so hyper-existentialized, right? We're afraid to act. It's like, if we act, well, what if that happens? Or what if this, and when someone says, no, we should just act, everyone, it's just in full panic. It's like, oh my gosh, this is a horrid fundamentalist person or something, and he thinks that you should just act. They don't understand all the possible negative ramifications of actions. We've got to get out of that mode. There's no trust in that mentality.
Lots of parked cars.
You just need to act, and trust that you can work things in the evolutionary process.
The exercise of will.
There is no way to act perfectly. What did it just say? Nothing is perfect. You can't act perfectly. Just act and go with the process. Okay?
The departure of the teacher-son core at the end of their first or some subsequent reign ushers in the dawn of the era of light and life, the threshold of the transition from time to the vestibule of eternity. The planetary realization of this era of light and life far more than equals the fondest expectations of your ancient mortals, who have entertained no more far-seeing concepts of the future life than those embraced within religious beliefs, which depict heaven as the immediate destiny and final dwelling place of surviving mortals. Sponsored by a mighty messenger, temporarily attached to the staff of Gabriel.
Okay, far more than equals the fondest expectations and of all these magical notions of, waking up in heaven after you die here. The year of light and life is way, way beyond your imagination. And notice that fundamentally it really got completely beyond what you can imagine. When the world was brought into relationship with the whole, right. The seeds had been sown in relationship to the parts. But finally you could get to the point of coming into relationship to whole. See, that's what so transcends our imagination. We are so part-like still. We just really can't think and hence imagine holistically. So thank God that by grace we can have some relationship to the whole in our lowly estate. Right? That's their little sweep through the dispensational epics. And the big thing that they kept pointing out is like, well, but then there's you. Right? Not normal. So it's obvious why they have the Lucifer Rebellion block of papers next to this, right? It's the little footnote, if you will, about that. why am I an exception to the rule? It all began 200,000 years ago. So, it might seem a little weird that in between this and actually talking about light and life, it's like we got you right up to light and life. Why isn't the next paper on the age of light and life? Because they need to deal with that, that lingering issue of why we didn't go through this process in the normal way. So that's what we'll start on next time, this little block of two papers on the Lucifer Rebellion. So everyone get ready for that. That'll be lots of meaty stuff.
Us reminding.
Okay, let's take a moment here, everyone.